because you have a steadiness about you. And I believe in you. But if it comes home, then you must be smarter than your enemy.
What are you trying to say?
The Americans, they're very smart, but sometimes they can be incredibly stupid. They spend all this money and time and energy on the so-called war on terror. They put satellites up in space. They can ram a smart bomb up a camel's ass from a situation room 5,000 miles away. But every time the U.S. kills an Al-Qaeda leader, what happens? There's a new one before the body's cold. You do it a million times, and they never get it because the real solution always eludes them. That is, do nothing.
Nothing.
Nada. If you want to shut down a fundamentally flawed system, all you gotta do is step out of its way, and it'll shut itself down. Nature has a way of correcting itself.
If we make it through December, everything's gonna be alright, I know. It's the coldest time of winter, and I shiver when I see the falling snow. If we make it through December, got plans to be in a warmer town come summertime. Maybe even California. If we make it through December, we'll be fine. Got laid off down at the factory, and their time is not the greatest in the world. Heaven knows I've been working hard. Wanted Christmas to be right for Daddy's girl. I don't mean to hate December. It's meant to be the happy time of year. And my little girl don't understand why Daddy can't afford no Christmas here. If we make it through December, everything's gonna be alright, I know. It's the coldest time of winter, and I shiver when I see the falling snow. If we make it through December, got plans to be in a warmer town come summertime. Maybe even California. If we make it through December, we'll be fine.
There we go, the great Merle Haggard. Yeah, right there, Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Truck Stop and Used Equipment Yard. Weapons of mass destruction all over the place. Now we cover them up so the feds can't see them. Put a big tarp over the top, stretch down from the trees. No problem. Yeah, right. Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right up here in north central Indiana, where it's cool day today. Had to put a little sweater on when I went outside, but the sunshine, the wind's blowing those leaves all over the place. I got 9,000 pounds of leaves in my yard. I don't even think I'm going to rake.
Boy, is that guy screwed up. He don't even know where he's at. He thinks it's wintertime. Oh, man. I'm going to send you out a show today. It's got some good stuff in it, but ignore the wrong addresses and so forth.
Oh, well, yeah, we are at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 4658. I've been becoming more socialist, real socialist, racial socialist, white socialist for a long time. But I think we're becoming to the point where we've got to push it even more, because otherwise the racialist cause is going to be kept in the hands of these right-wing reactionaries that, when push comes to shove, usually vote Republican. Or they run for office on the Republican ticket and all that kind of stuff. And that's not where the racial, white working racial people were very strong prior to the Second World War. Most of your white racial activity was pro-union and so forth. In fact, Klan even ran in cities in the north as far as Wisconsin supporting. Actually, they supported socialist candidates, but somehow the racialist cause got off the track and got into the hands of the upper middle class and the wealthy, even though they were controlling it by remote control. I think one story that brings that to the fore more than anything else, or as much as anything else, is the shootout at Greensboro, North Carolina. Now, at the time, I was jumping up and down and all excited for the right wing in doing that. And I supported them. I had them on the front page of my newspaper. But then I began to find out and read a little closer. Now, these communists that said they were communists or Marxists or whatever they called themselves were down there in most cases trying to working with the miners with black lung and so forth. They even had a couple of doctors, and I think that one doctor was killed in a shootout. And they were down there, even if it was just to get people to join up with their political party, at least they were trying to do some medical work and physical work for the white miners. Of course, they were doing it for all the miners. But and I got to thinking about that. I said, wait a minute. Why are white racial forces shooting it out with people who are trying to help white workers? Even though they're race mixers, they were helping white workers, and a good share of the people with black lung and all that were white workers. And, of course, I began to think a lot more of that as the years went on, and I said, there's something wrong here. Why would the white worker racialists end up in the camp, even though maybe they didn't know it, in the camp of the bosses, into the guys who were actually warring against the working class? You know, the big mine owners and all those kind of people down south. And so I began to see that much of the Klan, especially in the south, was oriented towards the Republican Party, and obviously that fed right on up into the big boys and the oligarchs and so forth. And I think that's what lost the struggle in the South in the civil rights period. I think if it had been played as a working class thing, it would have gone someplace, and they could have made some kind of deals with the blacks. Not going to mix up, but say, look, we'll agree not to disagree because we got to work for the working class. And then we'll figure out this separation. And I think they could have kept separation if they'd have played it that way. But once they got into the clutches of the big business people, they actually helped turn it into just a race situation. It wasn't just a race situation. It had a lot to do with labor and working class people. So these are the things that I've been sort of drifting that way for a long time, but now I'm getting really pissed at things and serious about this, more serious, or serious in a different way. I'm going to read you a little paragraph here from one of the great white socialists from Australia. You may have read about him. His name was Jack Lang. Jack Lang, a key advocate of the White Australia policy, was one of the leaders of the Australian Labor Party between the wars. Standing as a socialist and a racialist, he was elected Premier of New South Wales. Modern-day Marxists have tried desperately to play down the racialism of the early socialists, not only in Australia, but also in Britain and in the 1922 white workers' revolt in South Africa against the capitalists. But the Marxists are not the only enemies of the revolutionary nationalism. During the slump, the City of London financiers demanded usurious interest repayments, which threatened to finish off the Australian economy. Jack Lang decided to put his people before aliens, profits, and rejected the bank's demands. Reactionaries attacked this as Bolshevism. Financed by capitalists and the bankers, they organized the paramilitary New Guard and forced Lang's white socialist government out of office. Only a few years before the strike against the black labor by white workers in South Africa gold mines was crushed even more ruthlessly by armed reactionaries and the army of the capitalist British Empire. These two betrayals show how vital it is that nationalists are aware that the reactionaries can be just as dangerous as the Red Front Bolsheviks. So there you go, and I think that's how we're going to have to retrace our steps and pick up where a lot of these people, like Jack London and Tom Watson and all these people, left off. How the racialist cause got hijacked over into the hands of their enemies is somewhat of a mystery. We know a lot of the ways it happened and how the Jews got really involved, but we don't know everything about it. Now, so what I'm going to do now, Ned, I'm going to put on somebody from Socialist on here. And in this case, it'd be Mike Malloy, who's not a racist and who is definitely against racism. But on the other hand, he puts out a really good expose of what these fat cats are doing to us, the white working people. And in fact, all working people. So I'm going to run these once in a while, and you let me know what you think. I really like it because he really goes after them. And that's something you won't see on almost any of these other white racial websites or on the radio shows. And so I want you to take this information if you think it's important and spread it around. And if you want to tell all those right-wingers that Tom Metzger's a white socialist now, you go ahead and tell them, because I think that's the way we must go. And so I'm going. If you want to go with me, fine.
Now back to free trade agreements that Obama has presented to Congress for a vote, and you know what the Congress is going to do. That's the reason Obama submitted them, because he was told to, and the Congress is being told what to, how to vote. All right, here's promise number one. According to David Bacon at writing at Truth Out, a typical pro-business study predicted in 1992 that NAFTA would create 130,000 U.S. jobs in 2 years, double U.S. exports to Mexico, and create 600,000 jobs in Mexico. Today, Tom Donahue, CEO of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, repeats the promise, saying that these three new treaties also, quote, are about creating jobs, end quote. But according to the Economic Policy Institute, between 1993 and 2004, the U.S. trade deficit with Mexico ballooned by $107 billion. Which cost the United States 1,015,290 jobs, 123,000 of them in California. But although those jobs went south, Mexico lost far more jobs because of the treaty than those relocated from the United States. Mexico lost 1 million jobs just in the first year the treaty took effect, because the treaty allowed U.S. grain companies to dump corn in Mexico. And because of that, over 1 million farmers lost their livelihood as well. Dumping pork products in Mexico also cost another 120,000 jobs. Eliminating Mexico's domestic content laws cost the jobs of thousands of auto parts workers. 6 million people from Mexico came to live and work in the United States as a result of all this. The Colombian Free Trade Agreement has a provision identical to that in NAFTA, which led to the corn dumping in Mexico. So the farmers in Colombia will be uprooted also. This is your liberal, progressive, democratic president, folks. Do you care? Nah, hell no. Neither do I. I'm just saying. I couldn't care less about this. But I find it ironic that Barack Obama, who made all sorts of promises, turns out to be a liar. And, oh, you right-wingers, not about his birth certificate, you dumbasses. Why don't you get real about his policies? Oh, never mind. What am I talking about? Now, Panama, Enrique Afancasiadis. Henceforth, I'll refer to him as Enrique. He's the president of Panama's National Agricultural Organization. He says, quote, "We are certain that the free trade agreement will cause great displacement in the Panamanian agriculture sector, of which 40% of our nation's population depends. We Panamanians do not want to follow the Mexicans and Central Americans in the flood of immigrants to the United States, where many risk their life trying to be able to make a living. Forced displacement and immigration describes Mexico's experience under NAFTA, which is almost identical to the U.S.-Panama Free Trade Agreement," end quote. Now, according to David Bacon at Truthout, according to the Economic Policy Institute, Obama's free trade agreement with Korea will cost 159,000 U.S. jobs in 7 years, especially in electronics. And, of course, in the last decade alone, we've lost 6 million high-wage manufacturing jobs because of these horrific, except to the capitalists, free trade agreements. And you right-wingers, you don't understand any of this, do you? You Republicans, you conservatives, you're willing to sit back on your ridiculous asses and let somebody like Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh tell you that Barack Obama's responsible for this? You morons. You complete morons. Promise number two, people who supported NAFTA, supporters promised a NAFTA labor side agreement would protect the right to join unions and raise wages in Mexico. Just in the past 2 years, the Mexican government fired 44,000 electrical workers to destroy their union and help the giant mining company break a 4-year strike. NAFTA did nothing to prevent those or other violations of labor rights. Mexican wages have declined since the treaty took effect, producing more unemployed workers, more displacement, and more forced migration. And this is going to be the story in Colombia, where over 2,850 trade unionists have been murdered in the last 25 years, some of them murdered at the instructions of American corporations. Now, there's a little bit more about this that I'm going to share with you, so we'll do it when we come back from this break. But this is Barack Obama's three new free trade agreements with Colombia, South Korea, and Panama. I mean, this is just astonishing. The goal, you understand what the goal is. I'll tell you what the goal is when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. Let me go on. Anyway, the second promise that Obama broke, or I should say he lied about, was the a side agreement would protect the right to join unions and would, in fact, raise wages in these various companies or countries. That's the same thing that was promised to Mexico when NAFTA was passed. But in the past 2 years, like I mentioned before the break, the Mexican government fired 44,000 electrical workers to destroy their union, helped a giant mining company break a 4-year strike. This is going to be the story in Colombia, too, where 2,850 trade unionists have been murdered in the past 25 years. Just 3 weeks ago, Isidro Rivera Barrera, an activist in the Colombian Oil Workers Union, was repairing a washing machine in front of his home when a gunman jumped off the back of a motorcycle and shot him 3 times at point-blank range. The assassination followed a demonstration in which contract oil workers blocked roads and cut production in Puerto Gaitan for 3 days, while their Canadian employer, you see, a capitalist is a capitalist is a capitalist, accused them of being, quote, armed criminals. They were trade unionists. Colombian unions call the toothless side agreement proposed to protect their labor rights a fig leaf solely, quote, intended to ensure ratification, end quote. And as David Bacon writes at Truthout, union leaders in South Korea also have been arrested repeatedly and imprisoned, but there are no protections proposed at all for workers in South Korea or Panama. Caterpillar Corp., you've heard of them, calls Colombia, quote, a good place to conduct business, end quote. Oh, you know what that means. Tech America, which lobbies for Silicon Valley firms, says the Colombian Free Trade Agreement, quote, will give U.S. tech companies a competitive edge while strengthening free markets, enhancing stability, and fostering democracy, end quote, all of which is a goddamn lie. It is a lie. Higher profits and a competitive edge, so-called, don't ensure companies will keep jobs here. According to the Economic Policy Institute's founder, Jeff Fox, says, quote, as companies become multinational, whether they produce in America is irrelevant to their investors and top managers. Rather, these agreements provide global corporations with the opportunity to outsource production from the U.S. market. How long do you think it'll be now before Panama, South Korea, and Colombia start American corporations, Canadian corporations, transnational corporations, some of whom are based in the United States, will begin closing more American factories, more jobs? Now, for you people who wonder what the Occupy this and Occupy that, the demonstrations are about, this is what they're about. And David Bacon closes with this piece he wrote yesterday. Congress should listen. Free trade treaties that throw more workers on the street, undermine labor rights, and lead to forced migration are political suicide, for Democrats especially. Democratic candidates will need and will look for workers' votes next year. Regardless of promises about a stimulus or a new jobs bill, working families will not forget how they voted on these job-killing treaties. I mean, it just never stops. Now, what's the rationale behind this? I mean, a lot of people, you know, just like Jeff Young and his sponsorship of these 2 hours, he uses the quotes from Paul Gilding, Ronald Wright, and Naomi Klein. And this one by Paul Gilding, when you are surrounded by something so big it requires you to change everything about the way you think and see the world, then denial is a natural response. That applies here too, not just with the reality of global climate change. Even though we went through the NAFTA free trade agreement, so-called, and the GATT, General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs, which resulted in, and I don't know, Prairie too, every once in a while let me know, it was 20,000, 50,000 U.S. factories closed down. Millions upon millions upon millions of jobs left, never to return. They're never coming back. Never. And now this. Right, so what's it about? Well, the goal of the capitalists in this country, because a lot of people say, well, you know, this doesn't make any sense. So they're befouling their own nest. No. No, well, they may be, but that's not how they see it. The goal of capitalism is to eliminate entirely the good-paying lifetime jobs that the native U.S. workforce depended on for the past three generations and which built the middle class. Now, those three generations of American workers who received good pay for being the most productive workers on earth, their productivity made the capitalists rich too, but not rich enough. The capitalists always wanted all. The greed is insatiable. And capitalism is a system that knows no limits. It wants no boundaries, no restrictions. It is predatory. Look around if you don't believe. Come on, you right-wing smart asses who lay out there in the weeds and listen to this program, and every once in a while call in and start cussing. Think about it. No, never mind. You can't do that. Never mind. Go watch Dancing with Your Mama or whatever the hell is on tonight. So the free trade agreements have made it possible for the capitalists to take the jobs out of the United States with no penalty, no tariffs imposed when the products that are produced now in different countries come back in the United States, and they sit around and wonder why nobody has any money to buy this garbage. because it's produced now with workers making 1/10, 1/20, 1/50 the wage U.S. workers used to make, and the corporations used to make decent profits here, but it wasn't enough. A ratio of 40-1 for the CEOs over the worker on the floor was not good enough. What was good enough? 100-1, not good enough. 1,000-1, not good enough. More and more and more. The goal is to completely destroy the U.S. middle class and replace it with workers who are forced to come here from these countries, forced to come here, because their home economies have been destroyed by the capitalist greed and the free trade agreements. And once they get here, what? In that great morning when capitalism finally destroys the middle class in this country and everybody is working for whatever wages, like Michelle Obama is a classic example of one of the stooges for this crazed capitalism. She talks about eliminating the minimum wage and eliminating, or is it Rick Perry, also eliminating the child labor laws. Why, of course, you rancid sons of bitches, of course that's what you want to do. Of course that's what you are being ordered to do by the people who own you. Your Jesus doesn't own you. Your God doesn't own you. These capitalist monsters own you. So when it comes to that point where the average job in the United States will be paying $2.50 an hour, somebody from Colombia or Panama, or Nicaragua, or Mexico, or Guatemala, or wherever, will just be real goddamn glad to come here and take the job. Do you understand it now? Just a man, he's primo, lying on his feet. The outside is screaming, and I'm trying to put down. Come on, Michael. Letween. Jessica Letween. This is the Minnesota Fair Trade Coalition statement on the congressional approval tonight of this these agreements. When Congress passed the Korea, Colombia, and Panama free trade agreements tonight, it voted to export hundreds of thousands of U.S. jobs, reward labor and human rights offenders, harm our planet, and perpetuate tax evasion. Despite years of protest against unfair trade policies by Americans of all political affiliations, a majority of members of Congress chose to prioritize Wall Street and multinational corporations over their own constituents. This is a win for the top 1% of income earners, while the other 99% of us will be left to foot the bill. Fortunately, Minnesota Congressman Keith Ellison and Minnesota Congresswoman Betty McCollum took a strong stand for working families and against corporate greed by opposing all three trade deals. Four members of the Minnesota delegation split their votes, and she names them. The Korea deal alone threatens over 50,000 good-paying Minnesota jobs. This hits hard in a state that has already seen tens of thousands of jobs lost to failed trade policies, with families losing health care, savings, retirement, and homes as a result. While the Minnesota delegation to Congress may have split its votes on trade, polls show a majority of voters agree the pro-corporate, anti-middle-class policies perpetuated tonight by Congress are sinking working families across our country. The consequences of these votes tonight will linger for years to come. Hopefully, the growing movement against greed and government corruption will be strong enough to hold those who approve these pacts accountable for their actions. From the Minnesota Fair Trade Coalition. I don't think we can hold them accountable, though. How do we do that? How do we do that? And don't tell me we vote them out of office. We don't have the capability of voting people out of office unless the capitalists want them voted out. You should know that. If you have any doubts about this, for God's sake, just go to Brad Friedman's website, bradblog.com, and look at what he has written over the past, pick a number, 5 years? Election fraud after election fraud after election fraud. No, not voter fraud. Election fraud. Now, what's it going to take? I don't want to disagree with Jessica Letween too strongly here, but she references the people, the growing movement against greed and government corruption, the Occupy operations. That's just the beginning. That's the toe in the water. What it's going to take to stop this is not, 6,000 people showing up here or 10,000 people showing up there or 8,000 over there or 900 down here or 300 over there. What it's going to take is going to be millions of American, formerly American middle class workers, joined by millions of the working poor, joined by millions of the unemployed. That's what it's going to take. 3,000 people in Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C. is only a start. If you want to see this stop, then deliver 300,000 people to Freedom Plaza, and then deliver 3 million people to the streets of Washington, D.C., and 3 million more in New York, and another 3 million in San Francisco and Chicago, until the goddamn machine is forced to stop. That's the only way it's going to happen. And from David in St. Paul, Mike, we can look at what Obama said on the campaign trail. He stated he would put his walking shoes on and walk the picket line. That never happened. Obama didn't even mention the Madison protests when they were occurring, let alone walk the picket line. If he cannot support teachers or nurses or firefighters in this country, how can he support union workers in Colombia, Korea, etc.? Same blank, different Democratic president. What will it take? Well, it'll take billions of us in the streets. Like I said, the occupation movement and the October 2011 movement put together, among others, by Kevin Zeese and Margaret Flowers in Washington, D.C., is a beginning. Michael in Roswell, New Mexico, there was a 10-year report done on the effects of NAFTA in 2004 on each of the countries involved in the treaty. And in addition to what you've mentioned, that report said that not only had manufacturing jobs declined in Mexico, the average manufacturing wage had declined as well, from $3.15 an hour to $2.85 an hour. As importantly, the moment the manufacturing workers attempted to unionize plants, the maquiladora simply picked up and left, leaving horrible hazardous waste problems. That was another thorny issue brought up in the report. Even 10 years after the implementation of the treaty, protocols for disposition of hazardous waste were still being negotiated. The only entities to benefit from NAFTA were the multinational companies that could move goods through the free trade zones created by the treaty. Every country lost jobs. Manufacturing wages suffered. So-called free trade treaties that don't include environmental and union protections are ultimately destructive. Michael and Roswell. And that's so true. And the grim truth is there's not a capitalist out there who gives a goddamn about the environment, who cares not a whit about unionized workers. As a matter of fact, their entire goal is to destroy, to absolutely crush any union movement, any place on earth. Absolutely destroy it, to the degree that there are American corporations who, under the cloak of, supporting the fascist government that makes it easy for them to exploit the workers in that country, they will provide these American corporations the wherewithal for death squads. This has been going on for so damn long. I mean, it's just death squads to utterly and absolutely eliminate people who might go to work organizing workers in these countries. And again, a two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner, General Smedley Butler, yada, 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 wrote in War is a Racket. Just look it up. Just do a Google on War is a Racket. I wish some of you right-wingers would just do that. I mean, Smedley Butler was not a liberal. Smedley Butler was a double Congressional Medal of Honor winner. He was a general. He was a fighter. And he finally realized, like Veterans for Peace realize now, why we send troops into other countries. Just read it. I dare you. I dare all of you. Just read it. Just Google General Smedley Butler. You don't have to wade through an entire book. Just read some of what he said, of what was going on in this country, or being promoted by the government of this country in the first 10, 15 years of the 20th century. Just read it. Just read it, if you dare. Most of you are terrified to do that. As Paul Gilding writes, when you are surrounded by something so big that requires you to change everything about the way you think and see the world, then denial is the natural response. So many right-wingers cannot go get the facts, the real facts, the objective facts, not the garbage pumped into their empty heads by Beck and the rest of these paid assassins, but the real facts. I mean, the stuff that's out there, the historical truth. Just take a look. You can't do it, can you? Damn. That's a shame. In the meantime, the capitalists have decided that it's time for war with America, or with Iran. I heard Peter King today being interviewed by the once and former and current, I'm sure, Mossad agent who works for CNN, Wolf Blitzer. And Wolf and Peter King had this great discussion about the fact that, and it was fun to listen to Wolf Blitzer keep tossing softballs to Peter King, a Zionist at the very bottom of his heart, along with being a total anti-Muslim, anti-Arab kind of person, you know, the congressman from New York. But to listen to the Mossad agent toss Peter King these softballs that Peter King then knocked out of the studio, it was just unbelievable. But Peter King went so far as to declare what Eric Holder and his staff said. It sounds like something written, a script written in Hollywood, which is exactly what it is. This Iranian attempt to assassinate the Saudi ambassador in the United States. Peter King was referring to it as an act of war against the United States. There you go. An act of war against the United States. That's Obama's cover to go ahead and enlist the aid of the Israelis to attack Iran. Now, let's all hope that that doesn't happen. But Peter King was just frothing at the mouth. And Wolf Blitzer was, in his inimitable way, also. Wolf Blitzer doesn't froth about anything. But his way of frothing at the mouth was to continue to feed half-witted questions to this moronic Peter King. And Peter King continued to say, act of war, act of war, act of war. Now, the irony about all this, of course, to accuse a different country of attempting to enter the United States and assassinate someone is, I mean, the irony is so goddamn ludicrous, it almost causes you to want to gouge your eyes out or stick pencils deep into your eardrums. What did we just do in Yemen? What did we do in Pakistan? What have we been doing over and over and over again, if not illegally entering other people's countries and assassinating people we don't like, up to and including American citizens now? And these people have the audacity to stand there and say, how dare the Iranians, even though the plot is a bunch of bullcrap. From Mother Jones Online, four things you need to know about the Iran bomb plot. First, the assassination was never going to take place. On Tuesday, FBI Director Robert Mueller described Iranian-American Mansour Arabisian's alleged plot to assassinate the Saudi ambassador of the United States as straight out of a Hollywood script. In a sense, he was right, because the plot was controlled from the beginning by the FBI. According to the criminal complaint, when Arbasiar, that's the Iranian used car salesman, traveled to Mexico in May, to allegedly find an assassin from the ranks of Mexican drug cartels, he ended up talking to a paid DEA informant who dodged drug charges in exchange for cooperating with authorities. In keeping with previous sting cases, the FBI was careful to record statements from Arbasiar dismissing the possibility of numerous civilian casualties, something that makes an entrapment defense all but impossible to mount. Two, the U.S. thinks Iran is responsible. The criminal complaint states that Arbasiar believed his cousin, Ali Gholam Shakouri, was a member of the Al-Quds force, an elite faction of Iran's Revolutionary Guards. Under interrogation, the used car salesman allegedly identified two men who were known to the United States to be senior members of the Quds Force, one of whom allegedly met with his cousin in Iran to discuss the operation. More when he come back. Just
if everybody's wrong, young people speak in their minds.
of the four things you need to know about the Iran bomb plot, as posted tonight by MotherJones.com. Third thing, so much for Miranda rights holding interrogation. Ara Basir, the used car salesman, was arrested in late September, but he wasn't brought before a judge until Tuesday. That's because when he was arrested at the airport upon returning from another trip to Mexico, he, quote, knowingly and voluntarily waived his Miranda rights and his right to speedy presentment, end quote. So not only did he cooperate with interrogators, he flipped and implicated his cousin, Shakuri, by calling him and discussing the plot while the FBI was listening in, and all without waterboarding. Four. So about targeted killing. The New York Times' Charlie Savage recently reported on the contents of the legal memo authorizing the targeting of recently killed radical cleric Anwar al-Awlaki, which concluded that Mr. Awlaki could be legally killed if it was not feasible to capture him because intelligence agencies said he was taking part in the war between the United States and al-Qaeda and posed a significant threat to Americans as well as because Yemeni authorities were unable or unwilling to stop him, end quote. Well, Iran could make similar arguments about the Saudi ambassador if they felt so inclined, if they wanted to justify the plot, true or otherwise, all of which is to say that those rules may not be enough of a framework to prevent a future in which other countries that acquire drone technology decide to use them to eliminate their stated enemies as frequently as does the United States. Through the looking glass, boys and girls. Did I mention this hour and the last hour has been sponsored by Jeff Young in Australia? Thank you, Jeff, very, very much. I appreciate it. From Ron in Pennsylvania, Mike, so Obama's wimpy jobs bill was strangled in the crib by the Republicans, and yet the portion of the bill dealing with the free trade agreements with South Korea, Colombia, and Panama passed? I'm sick to my stomach. What's new? And I suspect, as you alluded to, it's going to take more than the paltry turnout at the various occupied positions to make the bastards ease up. But I look around Philly, and all the doggies go about their doggy lives as if nothing is happening, all whistling in the dark. It's going to get much uglier, isn't it? Like, real ugly. Like medieval. Ron, lost in PA. P.S. Year two of my layoff from Temple University. Mortgage is 2 weeks late. Yeah, it is coming. I hope it stays nonviolent, but at some point, the vanguard of this protest movement is already on the street and has been out there for several weeks now in some instances. And the morons in this country, whether they're right-wingers or politicians or the media, still can't figure out why the Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Washington, Occupy this, Occupy that is occurring. Willful, blatantly willful ignorance. You don't want to know. All right. Very simply put, capitalism is collapsing. Capitalism is collapsing. Not because somebody is destroying it from without. It is being destroyed from within the capitalist system. Part of the reason for its interior destruction is that it cannot sustain itself. It is eventually self-limiting, and it has occurred. The limits have been reached, and the people now are realizing, not just here, but around the globe, that the system has to change. It is no longer acceptable, if it ever was, for the top 1% of the global population to continue to stomp on the face of the other 99. What did O'Brien say to Winston Smith? Winston, if you want to see a picture of the future, it's a man with a boot on his face. Well, no. No, it's not. That may be a temporary result because the resistance is going to go up against a tremendous force. Power does not remove itself from the scene willingly. It never has. It never will. But sometimes the mere force of numbers, the mere presence of millions of people saying no, this is enough, will do the trick. And sometimes it won't. Sometimes it won't. Just look at history. Kate Petriti writes, Mike, I find it unbelievable that some people out there still don't get what the Occupy movement is protesting against. For any truth seeker looking for a primer on predatory capitalism, send them to my website, casereportcard.com. I just put up a clip from one of your programs in which you elucidated the history and methodology of the greedy bastards who have sent this economy and the American people into a tailspin. It's spot on and very entertaining, too. Well, thanks, Kay. Yeah, go to our website if you like to, casereportcard.com, and she has a audio clip, I guess. I think it's church night, after all, it is Wednesday. And if you are new to the program, Wednesday is church night on this program because when I was a kid growing up, Wednesday night was prayer meeting night in the Baptist faith. And I spent most of my summers with my grandparents, and they were Baptists, and so off we went to to prayer meeting. It was very, very scary for a 6, 7, 8-year-old kid. That's one of the reasons I refused to indoctrinate, have refused, and continue to refuse to indoctrinate any of my children with religious superstition, nonsense. But that's a different story. A judge in Seattle has dismissed a lawsuit by a group that wanted to run advertisements on the bus system there. The ads would accuse Israel of war crimes. And a federal judge says, no. U.S. District Court Judge Richard Jones ruled the other day that King County and Metro Transit officials were not really curtailing free speech by telling the Seattle Middle East Awareness Campaign they couldn't run the ads. No, that may look like free speech or curtailing free speech. It may sound like, but that's not impossible, curtailing free speech. It may stink like it, but it's not that. So don't call it curtailing free speech. The judge decided that he would not allow the ads to be posted. And he said it wasn't because of the content of the ads. Not at all. The ads would have shown a photograph described as children in Gaza next to a building destroyed in the 2008 Israeli invasion of Gaza, and the headline would say, Israeli war crimes, your tax dollars at work. Israeli war crimes, your tax dollars at work. Oh, no. Now, Seattle's metro transit system originally agreed to accept the ads, but officials decided against running the ads because of warnings from police about the consequences of running the ads. And a backlash that included plans for a counter campaign depicting Israel as the victim of terrorism. A counter campaign depicting Israel as a victim of terrorism. Israel always depicts itself as the victim of terrorism. So what's new? I mean, that's how every single American who follows this issue is told to think. So that argument doesn't hold up. It is the Palestinian people who are never shown as victims of terrorism. But what the Israeli lobby in this country is doing with this issue is exactly what Republicans do. They claim victim status before anything is done, when in fact they're the ones perpetrating the crime. It's an old trick, but as Goebbels pointed out, even old tricks continue to work. So anyway, a spokesman, Ed Mast, a spokesman for the organization that wants to run the ads, said the group is considering an appeal. But the judge said the decision not to allow the ads to be posted did not involve the content of the ads and was, in fact, a, quote, this is a judge talking, a reasonable restriction on a limited public forum, end quote.
Huh?
Jesus, God. So, yeah, you're not allowed in this country to show Palestinians and Yahweh forbid Palestinian children as victims of terrorism. Maybe the children who are blown to pieces and the buildings that are destroyed, the children are victims of not Israeli terrorism. They are victims of the refusal of Hamas to recognize the legitimacy of the state of Israel, keeping in mind that no other country on earth that I'm aware of demands that an occupied people recognize the occupier's legitimacy. We don't even do that in the countries we occupy. Of course, we're not there for reasons other than those laid out and forced into the public action by corporate America. Oy. Oy. You cannot ever in this country accuse Israel of terrorism, no matter what the state of Israel does. Ever. You may try, but you will find yourself being shouted down. At a news conference today, was it today or yesterday? Romney urged Texas Governor Rick Perry to disavow the remarks of his endorser, Richard Jeffries, a religious right leader, who called Mormonism a cult. Romney, you know, Romney's up there. Well, I'm not a cult. And he wants Perry to say, Anyway, People for the American Way's Right Wing Watch has reported on this preacher's remarks about Mormonism, as well as his derogatory comments about Catholicism, Judaism, Islam. Yeah, they're all crazy. Mormons, Catholics, Jews, and Islam. They're all insane. And the only true religion is the kind practiced by this regurgitated freak named Robert Jeffries. And that would be, of course, the hard right Baptist Reconstruction Dominionist, let's all rapture up to Jesus with our pants off kind of religion that's practiced by these crazy people. Everything else is wacko. Somebody ought to, I'd like to meet Mr. Jeffries sometime. I really would. Robert Jeffries, that conversation lasts about, or Jeffress, not Jeffries, I'm sorry, Jeffress. I'd like to meet Mr. Jeffress and tell him, you are one crazy son of a bitch, and you're imposing your craziness on other people. Why don't you, and the Mormons, and the Jews, and the Muslims, and the other Christians, just get off in a room and scream at each other until you all fall down dead? You know, but I don't think I'll ever have that chance. Anyway, People for the American Way today echoed Romney's appeal to Perry, but also urged both candidates to disavow endorsers who have perpetuated misinformation about and fear of American Muslims. In particular, Jay Sekulow of the American Center for Law and Justice. Right, American Center.
Well, we're ready to go here, and there's a letter I wrote to the local paper today. Dear editor, hey, working people, you've been had again. You heard the loud sucking sound several years ago as millions of jobs both here and Mexico disappeared due to free trade NAFTA. It led directly to 6 million more Mexicans crossing our border. Now it's Colombia and South Korea and Panama. When you hear free trade, always run like hell. Just like with NAFTA, you were lied to by both the Republicrats and the Democrazies and your corporate butt guy in the White House. Hundreds of thousands of more U.S. jobs are going to go bye-bye. Get your high school graduates ready to fight yet another military-industrial complex war, this time with Iran. Lie to them again about what heroes they are and that they are defending their country. Hope they don't join the thousands of U.S. troops who have committed suicide in the Middle East once they find out the truth. Oh, well, 50% of the troops aren't even U.S. citizens anyhow. And that was my recent letter to the local paper. Well, here's something you better be interested in. There's a new target for hackers, cars and trucks. And there's not a lot drivers can do about it yet. Most vehicles have computerized systems for everything from tire pressure, monitors, to hand-free phone capabilities. Reporter Greg Trudell says that the computers are vulnerable to hackers who can do a lot of damage. For example, they can disable the brakes or engine independent of the driver, shut off the air conditioning, use a method called fuzzing to play messages over the system that diagnoses problems with your car, unlock a car remotely and start your engine. Scientists recently found that cars could be hacked remotely. So there's a warning to all our friends and neighbors. The drug smugglers are quite inventive down there by the border. Drug smugglers are endlessly creative when it comes to inventing ways to move marijuana, cocaine, and other contraband from Mexico to the United States. In the latest innovation covered by law enforcement, smugglers in the border town of Nogales, Arizona, were bringing drugs into the U.S. for the cost of a quarter. The parking meters on the international street, which hugs the border fences in Nogales, cost 25 cents. Smugglers in Mexico tunnel under the fence and under the metered parking spaces and then cut neat rectangles out of the pavement. Their confederates on the U.S. side would park their false bottom vehicles in the spaces above the holes, feed the meters, and then wait until the underground smugglers stuffed their cars full of drugs from below. When the exchange was finished, the smugglers would use jacks to put the pavement plugs back into place. The car would drive away, and only those observers who were looking closely would notice the seams in the street. In all, the U.S. Border Patrol agents found 16 tunnels leading to 18 metered parking places on the international street. The pavement is now riddled with neat, symmetrical patches. It's unbelievable, Nogales Mayor Arturo Garino told Tucson, Arizona ABC affiliate KGUN. Those are the strides these people take to get drugs across the border. Past methods of smuggling have included catapults that launch bales of drugs across the border fence. The smugglers have tried everything, said Garino, and this is one of the most ingenious methods of them all. The city, advised by Homeland Security, has agreed to remove the parking meters. Nogales stands to lose $8,500 annually in parking revenue, plus the cost of citations. Well, damn.
Well, since this is Ladies' Day, let's close it out with something I think that most ladies would like to hear. How about that?
Seeing what you wanted to see.
today is the 19th, right, the 19th of April, 2017, and that goes back, I don't think I had a date on that show, but it goes back quite a ways. Obama was president. That was Mike Malloy, and I have a lot of confidence in him, except on the race issue. As far as economics, labor, and so forth, he does a great job as far as I'm concerned. So anyhow, that's it, and I hope you got something out of that and which way we should be going instead of playing around in Auburn, Mississippi, or Georgia, fighting in the streets with other white working people that may be screwed up on the race issue, but get with them, straighten them out. But they're not going to straighten them out if you continue this right-wing capitalist position, because it's bullshit. Jack London. Read about Jack London. Yeah. Bye-bye.